In the different grades, from very low grade to more refined, more subtle forms of fruitive activities, including the religious kind, including even those that are aspiring transcendentalists, provided they do not connect themselves in pure devotional service, unmixed with karma and jnana, then fruitive tendency contaminates and causes one to again take birth. You all know the key verse, the principal utterance, Mahavakya, of Nectar of Devotion. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma janavratam. So that's Rupa Goswami's summary of the message of Nectar Devotion, which is the message of Lord Chaitanya's teachings about devotional service. And this section of the Bhagavatam is not just confirming or saying the same thing, it's the basis upon which Lord Chaitanya taught and Rupa Goswami taught what Lord Chaitanya taught. Kapila Dev doesn't just make the statement, he illustrates with very surprising explanations of who takes birth again. It's not just wanton, out-of-control sense gratifiers. And it's not just people who are way above them, pious, and by that piety go to the heavenly planets and again, exhausting that piety, fall down. That's discussed in Bhagavad Gita. There are far more subtle forms. The message that we should be getting from that, I'll just specifically is going back a bit. Persons who are too addicted to this material world execute their prescribed duties very nicely and with great faith. They daily perform all such prescribed duties with attachment to the fruitive result. So, pious, but attached to the fruitive result. That's the hook that pulls them back into the material pool. They worship the forefathers, they worship demigods, they're busy all day and night improving the economic condition of their family, social, and national life. Where the specifics are. The Sanskrit term is apritak kama. They have a separate interest. My dear mother, someone may worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a special self-interest. But even demigods such as Lord Brahma, great sages such as Sanat Kumar, and great munis such as Marichi, have to come back to the material world again at the time of creation. When the interaction, this is verses, this is Kapila speaking. When the interaction of these three modes of material nature begin Brahma, who is the creator of this cosmic manifestation, and who is full of Vedic knowledge, and the great sages who are the authors of the spiritual path, and the yoga system, come back out of the influence of the time factor. They are liberated by their non-fruitive activities, and they attain the first incarnation of the Purusha, but at the time of the creation, they come back in exactly the same forms and positions as they had previously. Yikes. They do not have separate interests. It pulls you, pulls them, it'll pull. So, therefore, verse 23, I'm going to recite the Sanskrit of the verse, and many of you will recognize, except for the very last line, a verse from Canto 1, Chapter 2. Listen. Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojataha janiyati ashu vairagyam. What's the last line? Jnanam chayada haitukam. That's Canto 1, Chapter 2, verse either 7 or 8. It's the first answer to the first question, or the answer to the first question, asked by the sages to Suta Goswami. Let's go back to Canto 1, Chapter 1. The sages have assembled in Naimisharanya, the sages of the planet, because they're sages, they knew it's time for Kali Yuga to begin. Krishna has left the planet. Maharsh Pariksit, after him, was cursed by a Brahmin. The king, the emperor was cursed by a Brahmin and he died. Shukadeva Goswami, before that happened, spoke the Bhagavatam. So they knew Kali Yuga was on the rise. And because they knew that, they wanted to do something. That's what people who are elevated do. They see there's a problem, they want to do something. Not just, oh, there's a problem. So they decided to hold a yajna, a 1,000-year yajna. That's a long yajna. It means many generations. That started, and the purpose of it was to neutralize or diminish the ill effects of Kali Yuga. And much to their happiness, in the assembly of sages was the sage Suta Goswami, and knowing that he, Suta Goswami, had heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva, they wanted to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from him. So they gave him an elevated seat and praised his qualification. Not only he heard the Bhagavatam, but he understood it, and not only he understood it, but he assimilated it, and not only he assimilated it, but he could then explain it from position of realization. So, you know, they wanted to milk the cow and wanted to receive that nectar from him. And they began the process by presenting a series of questions. So in the first canto, chapter 1, for those of you that do careful study of the Bhagavatam, you'll learn there are 6 questions in chapter 1, and then chapters 2 and 3, there's 6 answers. So the first question is, in this age of Kali, people are in a very unfortunate condition. Their spiritual interest is greatly diminished. Their lifespan is greatly diminished. Even their spiritual interest is greatly diminished. If there are some who inquire about spiritual life, who do they inquire from? Because there are no qualified persons. They'll be cheated by unqualified persons who say, oh yeah, here's the answer, and it's that way, when it's that way. And they're lazy, misguided, unfortunate, and always disturbed. You know that nice verse. Prayina payushakshabhya kalavasmin yugejana mandaksa mandamatayo mandabhagya upadvita. So, for the benefit of the people of the age of Kali, they're not going to go through the vast body of Vedic literature and glean from it the essence. They're not going to do that. They won't have the capacity to do that. They have the they're unfortunate victims of the age of Kali. So can you please take the essence of all the Vedas and summarize it in a little statement? Wow, great question. What's the essence of all the Vedas? And the answer that's given, chapter 2, is the verse that I just recited. And guess what? It's the same verse here in chapter 32, canto 3, except for the last line. Here's the verse in chapter 32, text 23. Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojitaha janayati ashu vairagyam jnanam yad brahma darshanam. Just the last part is different. Same message, because Sutta was saying what he heard from Shukadeva Goswami, and Shukadeva Goswami was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, and here's Kapila Dev and Srimad Bhagavatam. So, he didn't make it up. Sukadeva Goswami is what he heard from Vyas. And Vyas compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. He took the four essence verses and expanded into 18,000 verses. And this is an important verse that we're discussing this morning. Here's the translation. Important verse in this sense. Here's a Bhagavad Gita quiz question. What's the verse in Bhagavad Gita? There's one verse or one phrase that's the beginning of two verses where Krishna is saying the same thing. The last part is a little bit different, but the essence. Mami Vaishashi Satyam Te Pratijani Priyosi Me. So, always think of me, become my devotee, Madhyaji, worship me, Mam Namaskuru, offer obeisances to me. Very important verse. Krishna says it twice. And the positioning of those verses is also noteworthy. It's at the end of Chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, is exact middle of Bhagavad Gita. It's like holding up the whole Bhagavad Gita. It's just that one verse. It's right in the middle. Last verse of the 9th chapter. And then, just before the Sarva Dharma Pritya Jamami Kam Sharanam Braja verse comes that one again in chapter 18. That's a summary of everything previous, chapter 18. So here, this is Kapila Dev's teaching. And he's saying the same thing that Sukadeva Goswami said, Sutta Goswami said, based upon what Sukadeva Goswami said, which is, it's an essence verse. The essence of all the Vedas is what's being taught here, right now, this morning. Here's Prabhupada's purport. It is said by less intelligent men that bhakti yoga or devotional service is meant for persons who are not advanced in transcendental knowledge and renunciation. And then the rest of the purport is rubbish, because by the performance of devotional service, this verse confirms, those qualifications naturally arise. And not only arise in a now you see it, now you don't impermanent fashion. They arise from the platform of the soul, and therefore they're permanent. They become permanent assets of the devotee just by engaging in devotional service. They're awakened naturally. Transcendental knowledge is awakened. Someone was asking last night, those two American young men, if I just chant, will I realize Krishna? Will I realize the message of Krishna? Just chant. And the answer is yes. I mean, if that's the case, why do we need Bhagavad Gita? Well, we need all the help we can get. Krishna is from the inside and Krishna is from the outside giving the stereophonic message, and I'm in the middle, and if I hear it from the inside, I can also hear from the outside. And then confirm something that comes from the inside. Is it outside too? Is it what Krishna says that I can confirm? Emphasis in the purport goes to there's no need for some extraneous effort or secondary effort or additional effort or speculative knowledge effort necessary to gain knowledge. Well, because when we read Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, we're not gyanis interested in picking from the tree of knowledge some knowledge for our knowledge basket or information basket and go around showing people, look at how much I got in my basket. I got all this knowledge. Look at this. That's not the purpose or the mood of the devotee. It's an act or expression of devotion. Let me hear from Krishna. Because by hearing from Krishna, my devotion for Krishna will increase. And as my devotion for Krishna increases, then I can realize the message of Krishna. And that will enable me to understand Krishna. And if I understand Krishna, then I love Krishna. To know him is to love him. It's to enrich the love for Krishna. That's why I read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Not gathering knowledge. Rather, that knowledge awakens naturally by the act of devotion. The mood of devotion is of paramount importance. It is said that one who engages unflinchingly in devotional service of the Supreme Lord actually has all good qualities of the demigods develop in him automatically. One cannot discover how such good qualities develop in the body of a devotee, but actually it happens. There is one instance that also the Mugari, the hunter, is mentioned. He was of bad character, but by becoming a devotee, good character developed. He didn't go to character school. He just had association of Narada, and good character came by his devotion. Next paragraph. Those who are very eager to advance in transcendental knowledge, gyanis are interested in doing that, can engage themselves in pure devotional service without wasting time in mental speculations for arriving at the positive conclusions of knowledge in the absolute truth. The word brahmadarshanam is significant in this verse. Brahmadarshanam means to realize or to understand the transcendence with a capital T. One who engages in the service of Vasudeva can actually realize what Brahman is. Brahmadarshanam. That's the preamble, and then that's the fruit, means, and the conclusion. Listen to how Prabhupada very expertly explains this. If Brahman is impersonal, then there's no question of darshanam, which means seeing face to face, quote unquote. Darshanam refers to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, unless the seer and the seeing are persons. There's no darshanam. Brahma darshanam means that as soon as one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can at once realize what impersonal Brahman is. A devotee does not need to make separate investigations to understand the nature of Brahman. Bhagavad Gita also confirms this. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. A devotee at once becomes a self-realized soul in the Absolute Truth. Who knows what that verse is that ends in Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Mam Shayo Vyapacharina. What's the rest? Sangunan Samatityayata Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Mam Chayo Vyabicharena Bhakti. Avyabichari Bhakti. Undivided devotion and service. Vyabichari and Avyabichari. Mam Cha Yo, that person who engages in undivided devotional service unto me. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. They transcend the modes. Sangunan. Samatityayatan, completely beyond the modes. And they, Prabhupada translate, they once come to the level of Brahman. So devotional service is from the Brahman platform. And one realizes Krishna, and naturally because Brahman is an aspect of Krishna, the impersonal effulgence emanating from Krishna, one realizes what Brahman is from the Brahman platform. Not from, I'm on this platform looking up and thinking, well, maybe it's this and that and the other thing. It's not this, and it's not that, and it's not that, and it's not that. So what is it? Well, it's not this. That's what it is. The neti-neti process by speculation. What is it? Well, it's not this. That's good. So what is it? Well, it's not this. Not that. And this has qualities, so that must have no qualities. This has personality, so that must have no personality. By inference and logic, that's the conclusion. That's the best you can get. And often that isn't reached because it's too dry, so one wants sense gratification to juice it up a little bit. But the best of the impersonal speculative process is the impersonal realization. That's a very, just give it a nice sounding, it's incomplete. It's misguided, a little more. It's erroneous. It leads one to think, okay, now that I understand that Brahman is not this, and Krishna appears in this, so Krishna must be one of not this too. So what Krishna, this is Mayavad philosophy, so plug your ears. Krishna is Brahman, the impersonal Brahman, that's covered by a very subtle, very rarefied, very elevated material covering. Brahman is covered. He's way up there, but he's Brahman that's covered. And therefore, when Krishna says, surrender to me, what he means is something else. He means surrender unto the impersonal within Krishna. That's their logic. But wait a minute. You're cheating. Krishna says, surrender to me, and he means it. Otherwise, don't even bother talking about Krishna says, because, you know, he's a little slow, he's a little dull, he really doesn't know how to say what he means. If that's the case, then don't quote him. But Krishna is not dull and, you know, a little incompetent to express himself. He knows exactly what he wants to say, and he says it. He says, surrender to me. First person singular. First person, singular. Me. And same in this verse. So, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, a devotee at once becomes self-realized soul in the Absolute Truth, which has different features. Another verse from chapter 3, Bhagavatam. The Absolute Truth is realized in different features, and they're all non-dual, absolute, not relative, not the modes of nature, beyond the modes of nature, sagunan samatitaitan. Absolute Brahman includes, Absolute Truth includes Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Bhagavan is of the same absolute nature as Brahman is, as is Paramatma. They're different aspects of the Absolute Truth. That's the Srimad Bhagavatam's assertion or conclusion. So, one more verse, nice verse. It's a compliment for the verse that we just read. Different Sanskrit. Yadasya. Dasya, it means a devotee. Dasya. He's engaged in devotional service. When the devotee, so the exalted devotee's mind becomes equipoised in sensory activities. And he is transcendental to that which is agreeable and not agreeable. Priyam, apriyam. I like, I don't like. So, a qualification of a devotee who is fixed in Krishna consciousness is dhira. They're not attracted to something, they're not repulsed by something. They can recognize between this and that. They don't lose their faculty of discrimination. But they're not attracted to this and repulsed by that. Oh, I really like that which is agreeable and I don't like that which is... They're not... Name dvesho stina priyaha, as Krishna says about himself. Dvesha means I don't like, and priya means I like. Krishna sees distinctions, the devotee sees distinctions as Krishna sees distinctions, but they're not attracted, they're not moved by duality. That's possible only when it's fixed in transcendence. So here's the purport. And that leads to detachment, the vairagyam from the previous verse. Janayati ashu vairagyam. Vairagyam means detachment. So that in the state of detachment is manifest in the mind, not attracted or repulsed, but equipoised in all circumstances. So purport. The significance of advancement in transcendental knowledge and detachment from the material attraction is exhibited in the personality of a highly advanced devotee. For him, there is nothing agreeable or disagreeable because he does not act in any way for his personal sense gratification. Whatever he does, whatever he thinks, is for the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead. Either in the material world or in the spiritual world, his equipoised mind is completely manifested. You can understand that in the material world, there's nothing good. Everything is bad due to its being contaminated by material nature. But on the other hand, everything in the material world is good as far as it is used in service to Krishna, the All Good Supreme. Because so, at the end, almost the end of the 10th canto, so Krishna, everything has been explained, including all of Krishna's pastimes. And here is Maharishi Parikshit scratching his head saying, wait a minute, What just happened? I was in Maya. And now I'm feeling I'm not in Maya anymore. I'm in this place of transcendence. And how did that happen? Because I was using my ear. That's material. And you were using your tongue. That's material. So how did it happen? Listen carefully. It's a very important question. Like, how do we get out of this place? This contaminated place. As it's being described, everything is bad. And this is Prayers by the Personified Vedas, chapter 87. It's the longest chapter in the whole 10th canto. It's really deep. If you want to go swimming where you might drown, go to the chapter 87 and, you know, read it. Try to understand what it's saying, and you won't understand it, so you read it again, and you won't understand it, read it again. It's very, very, very profound and deep. So you won't understand it by speculation, you'll understand it by Krishna will show you something. But when Shukadeva Goswami hears the question, he says, this is a fantastic question. It's such a wonderful question that long, long ago it was asked by these sages. And when they were discussing, he said, oh, this is such a wonderful question. It was discussed long ago by the personified Vedas and the four Kumaras. And then Shukadeva Goswami just speaks about their conversation. And the short answer to that question is, everything that exists here has its connection there to Krishna. And when things here are not seen and utilized in relation to their source, they act in a material way. But those very same things, when used in service to Krishna, they become spiritualized and they act in a spiritual way. So this ear and this tongue can act spiritually. So that which is, going back to this purport, that which is bad can become good if it's utilized in the proper way. And that means in proper consciousness. Not just make some sounds and hear some sounds, but connect consciousness with the subject matter, the source, not just make a sound. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, chanting is not merely making a sound. You can have a machine make a sound. Or you can train a parrot to make a sound. And that's not what chanting is. It's a sound. But it's not the full understanding of what, or full meaning, the full impact of what chanting is. Rather, chanting is when the soul calls out to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, oh Lord Nityananda, you're the deliverer of the pure holy name, and I am in this dark condition of material existence. Kindly show your compassion and deliver the pure holy name. And when that pure holy name then touches the heart of such a person, and the sound comes, that's chanting. Very nice. That's chanting. And then the very same tongue and the very same ear can act in a fully spiritual way. That's chanting. The materialists' conclusions of good and bad, moral and immoral, etc., are simply mental concoction or sentiment. Actually, there is nothing good in the material world. In the spiritual field, everything is absolutely good. There is no inebriety in the spiritual varieties. What does that mean? What does inebriety mean? Drunk, stupor. It's something that's contaminated. There's no contamination in the spiritual world. So what are we supposed to do? Because we're in the material world. We're supposed to act in such a way that this place becomes Vaikuntha. I think I shared this while here. I like this little statement. Prabhupada was once asked, Swamiji, what happened? What's going to happen if the whole world becomes Krishna conscious? Prabhupada's reply was, don't worry, it won't happen. Then he said, but if it did happen, this place would become Vaikuntha. So how do you make this place Vaikuntha? It's like the statement that a temple is Vaikuntha. I heard it three times. Prabhupada, twice in Brooklyn and once in Manhattan, said, this is not the material world. This is not New York City. This is Vaikuntha. The temple. Why? Because the activities of Vaikuntha take place here. Worship of Krishna, chanting of Krishna's name, everything centered on Krishna. That's the spiritual world. That which is of this world becomes spiritualized by the medium of devotional service. Because a devotee accepts everything in spiritual vision, he is equipoised. That is the symptom of his being elevated to the transcendental position. He automatically attains detachment, vairagya. Then, jnana, knowledge. And then, actual transcendental knowledge, vijnana. The conclusion is, last sentence, that an advanced devotee dovetails himself in the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And in that sense, he becomes qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the place becomes spiritualized, consciousness becomes spiritualized, the person becomes qualitatively, not quantitatively, one with the Supreme Lord. The oneness through, as he says in the previous verse, being on the same platform. They stand on the same platform. That is oneness. That kind of oneness. Not the impersonal oneness. Sayuja Mukti. But Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Becomes situated on the spiritual platform. Qualitatively one with the Supreme. That's big. For persons who are like us, loitering in the material world, some dark circumstance, trying to get some light, and it's difficult. We try and we get knocked down, we get up again, try again, get knocked down, and get up again. How many times can you get up again? Keep getting knocked down and keep trying again. It's our effort alone is not sufficient. It's the nice realization from that one is not, oh, I give up. The nice realization is I need to depend upon Krishna. And then the reciprocation from Krishna comes commensurately. Remember Prabhupada speaking, as proportionate to your surrender, if you give yourself 10% to Krishna, he won't interfere. He'll give himself 10% to you. The other 90% is 50%, 80%. Yayatamam prapadyante. As we surrender to Krishna, he reciprocates proportionately. So this is what Kapila Deva's teaching is the Bhagavatam's message. One should completely, avyavichari bhakti, completely place oneself in the service of Krishna. I call it the one pocket program. The two pocket program is so much for me, so much for Krishna. So much for me, so much for Krishna, like a mantra. Me, me, Krishna, Krishna. You just keep up that other pocket, you just have one pocket. Everything's for Krishna. Check and see what's in his pockets. Everything for Krishna. Well, what about... No, what about everything for Krishna? Well, what if Krishna forgets? So I got to have something on the side. Hedging, it's called in the material world. No hedging. Everything for Krishna. At least cultivate that stage, recognizing, well, I have my attachments over here. And then that's where this phrase, dovetailing. The conclusion is that an advanced devotee dovetails himself in the transcendental qualities of the Lord. So he becomes qualitatively one. And that means, like Dhruva, who wanted a big-time kingdom, when he was done, he didn't want the big-time kingdom, but guess what? He got it. But it was not in material consciousness, because the Lord uplifted him. He not only got his father's kingdom, but he got that kingdom that's better than his father, and better than his father's father, and better than his father's father's father. That's the spiritual world. Because his father was Uttanapada, whose father was Swayambhuva Manu, whose father was Lord Brahma. So what's a kingdom that's better than Lord Brahma? Vaikuntha. That's where he went. After 60,000 years of ruling in Uttanapada's kingdom, while Uttanapada went to the forest to do what Dhruva did. Gained the mercy of Vishnu. And his father also became delivered by the Lord. Inspired by...
I think Prananda Prabhu was going to come in the front.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Okay. So, in that moment of turmoil, what any comments or questions? Discussion, yes.
So this isn't necessarily like a philosophical harmonizing of different points, but a practical how to live with that kind of last theme about... we see even in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a verse that considering things bhadra, auspicious or inauspicious, is just a function of the mind. So that's on this mental platform.
Yeah.
But then we hear we should accept things that are favorable for Krishna consciousness and reject things that are unfavorable. So we have to make this evaluation.
Sure, we're making distinctions.
And what's auspicious and what's auspicious for me, but
I'm well, not no, it's not. Those are different words. They have different connotations. The auspicious, inauspicious connotation commonly has to do with karmakanda yagyas. And when you're going to do a karmakanda yagya, you have to have everything that's auspicious. At the right time, the right place, facing the right direction, by the right person, with utensils and paraphernalia that's the right ones. And otherwise, you don't get the result. If you didn't calculate all of that properly. So you, in that case, the connotation is, bring in the favorable and avoid the unfavorable. Shubha, ashubha, palayar eva mokshase karma bandhanai. Verse in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Devotional service, that's our rendering, devotional service transcends the consideration of that kind of karma kanda calculation. Here's an example from Chaitanya Charitamrita. A brahmana is not to take food in their mouth until they've completed certain brahminical duties. They've completed all of their puja and, all the purificatory procedures. And then they break the fast. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when Lord Chaitanya brought in Jagannath Mahaprasad while still in bed, hadn't done anything. Immediately took Mahaprasad. And Lord Chaitanya said, Tarabhu Bhattacharya, you're a Brahmin. You're breaking this regulation. You're very strict. You know when you're strict. But what are you doing? And he quoted scripture saying, Prasad of the Supreme Lord should be taken at once in any circumstance. So that trumps the Shubha and Ashubha of this Smarta Brahman and the regulations of Karmakanda. That's one thing. Then another is this accept things favorable, reject things unfavorable for devotional service. We're making discriminations. And what is favorable and unfavorable for devotional service? For example, intimately associating with worldly-minded persons. Intimately associating with such persons is something that's unfavorable. So a characteristic of a devotee, Lord Chaitanya said, is asat sangat tyag a Vaishnavachar. So that's a discrimination. Something that's unfavorable. It's not auspicious and inauspicious. It's not favorable for devotees. The terminology is different. It may, from a distance, look like the same thing. But it's not the same thing. One's on the material platform and the other's on the spiritual platform. And we accept those things that are favorable, reject things unfavorable for devotional service. We're making the intelligence is alert. We're making distinctions between right. There's more to that?
It's a challenge on the very practical level to always make a faithful devotional type evaluation, and sometimes we just make a superficial evaluation, which is much more in terms of, oh, that'll be a favorable thing, but we're kind of like materially calculating the circumstance more than...
Well, that's, you know...
our lack of maturity
and whatnot. Yeah. Lack of maturity and also lack of proper understanding. You know, I can have proper understanding and still do the, you know, the cutting corners and cheating and deceiving program. But it could be any number of things. But yeah, if you have proper training and proper submission to that, you know, proper understanding, they're not going to cut corners. You do what's to be done and avoid what's not to be done. Something else? Yeah.
The living entity initially or at the beginning, the living entity is fully knowledge and the relationship with the Lord, but somehow he came to the delusion and come to this material contact. But after endeavoring all these things, going back to Godhead, again he may come back to this material world in any way. In other words, like...
Purnarjanma Nividyate. If once coming to Krishna, returning to Krishna, will he come again?
Yes.
And the answer to that, I'll say it slowly. In principle, the possibility is there, but practically it doesn't happen. In principle, because the living entity is tatastha, means marginal. So marginal means can go this way or that way. We have free will. We can free will choose to be with Krishna. We can free will choose, I don't want to be with Krishna. Free will is intrinsic to the soul. It's not that we lose it when we return to the spiritual world. It's still there. So the operative possibility is still there. I've heard Prabhupada say it 3 times in lectures. So it's not that the soul loses free will by entering into the relationship with Krishna once again. Not so. The potential, the potency, the tatastha position is still intrinsic within the soul in the liberated position. But then two things, both of which Prabhupada described in different times, he does not make that same mistake again. He said, Prabhupada said, he's learned his lesson. And then a second explanation that Prabhupada gave on another occasion was Krishna protects him. Tendency, but Krishna protects him. He gives his promise. And Krishna doesn't break his promise to his devotee. They're both understanding. So the potential is still there.
What is the main difference we see at the beginning and the one to go back?
That's a whole other discussion. It could be a long one. It could be a short one. One of the explanations that Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives, you can look it up, you can find it in... his English, not a translation of, but his own English language of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his life and precepts. It was written in 1896 and it was sent around the world, and there are copies available, even the originals, or copies of the originals, or, you know, modern publications. So when it comes to his life, it's summarizing the pastimes of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Teachings, he gives... Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives his classic Dasamula Tattva, the 10 essential teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And one of those teachings is the living entities. Some living entities are liberated, some living entities are conditioned. So when he discusses that section, he says, do not ask the misleading question. When the living entity was created, or when the living entity was enthralled, because it's not an event within time. So the first one is easy. The second one is where we get lost. The living entity is not created because the living entity is eternal. But we speak, the living entity is an expansion of Krishna, one of his energies. Right? Yeah. It's a special category of energy. It's para prakriti, but prakriti. And then there's apara prakriti from the language of Bhagavad Gita. But so there's Krishna and there's Krishna's energies. Then there's the enthrallment of the living entity. Now, the enthrallment of the living entity is an event. But it's not an event in time. But what's an event that's not in time? We're thinking of it in terms of time. Once upon a time, living entities in the spiritual world. And he looks at his watch and says, I think it's time to, you know, enjoy independently from Krishna. And boop, he's in the material world. That's an event within time. But it's not an event within time. But it's an event. The problem, the difficulty in this topic is Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we describe and we think in terms of time. Because that's our experience. What else is there? There's anadi events. there's events that have a beginning. There's events that don't have a beginning. But they're events. That's the problem. So in the chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita, in a purport, in text in the 20s of that chapter, Prabhupada speaks about the living entity is called, his bondage is anadi. And Prabhupada writes, I don't want to go further in this topic than the next sentence I'm going to speak. Prabhupada writes that for the living entity that is enthralled, or within the material world, he doesn't use enthralled, we're covered living entities. We're not going to be able to understand that event. So don't waste your time trying to understand that event, is his advice. But rather, when the living entity becomes liberated, then it'll understand the event. So don't try to, because you don't have the capacity to. You can gesture in the direction of, but it's an anadi event. But what's the cause of that anadi event? The living entity misusing his free will. And then you go, well, wait a minute. It was so nice there. Well, why did he blow it? What was the prompt? It's not something external. It's misuse of free will. Okay, well, what prompted the misuse of free will and so the proper use of free will? It's his own independence, and he misused it. Or we misused it. Well, when did that happen? It's not an event within time. It's an event. Let's change the flow of conversation now, because that goes on endlessly. Endlessly. Yeah, but... Yes.
No, sorry, we weren't here for the class, but I was just keen of the type of this conversation and your mention of proper understanding and maturity. So if I may, I wanted to just present a scenario and then ask my question. So if we find over time that there are different personalities, so let's say I'm the kind of person who likes everything to be peaceful and, you know, harmonious and so on and so forth. So I may take from Prabhupada, that side of him or those instructions of his, and see it as proper understanding, you know, that my ultimate is to be loving towards everybody, not finding any discord and things like that. There may be another person who's more emotional, expressive, kind of a different personality type. So for them, the discriminatory side of Prabhupada may be very evident. So they may slowly go towards proper understanding and maturity in terms of, taking a certain position and so on and so forth. So is proper understanding and maturity, are they also, kind of somewhat to where the Mithaipur was going, is that also very subjective? And is there also variety?
In sure. The... I don't know subjective, but variety for sure. Unity and diversity. The spiritual world is filled with variety, and the variety is all spiritual.
So
and to get there, we're not all spiritual. We're contaminated. But I'll read the sentence again. It's a very concise and eloquent and elegant way of saying. The conclusion is that an advanced devotee dovetails himself in the transcendental qualities of the Lord, and in that sense he becomes qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, take it from either end. Is there only one type of person that can become a transcendentalist? Than the other is. In the spiritual world, is everything homogenized? No. There's variety, and it's all spiritual. So over here, it's variety that's not all spiritual. So how do we get it? So we utilize this in connection with the qualities of Krishna. When just a little side comment, I'm the kind of person who, I've heard that phrase spoken from time to time over the years, and what I've come to understand about that is that's upadhi, it's not who we are. And then another person says, well, I'm the kind of person who, and fill in the blank, and that's another upadhi, and as soon as you're on that platform, there's clash. Minus Krishna in the center. It holds the, you know, the within that diversity, the unity. Therefore, recognizing there's diversity on the material platform, how do we get to the spiritual platform? By sheltering the same supreme. So then I need to acknowledge that there are different persons with different propensity. It's still material, psychophysical nature that's based upon guna and karma. That's material. That's not the transcendental personality. But that person, like me, who has another psychophysical nature, needs to engage that psychophysical nature in Krishna's service. And that is the art of devotional service, respecting, learning to understand unity and diversity. There's that famous letter where Prabhupada wrote to Kirtananda about unity and diversity, and it's a subject that's worth pondering again and again and again and again and again and again as we make a little advancement again and then little more advancement again, because our perspective on what that is certainly going to change. It has everything to do with a theme that's woven into this section of oneness on the spiritual platform. Oneness where there's diversity. Here, by the connection with sadhana bhakti, and on the spiritual plane, where everything is of the same quality as Krishna, with full diversity. Where it may even look like there's opposition between, you know, the left wing and the right wing gopis, for example. But it's Krishna's pleasure. Now, when we have, you know, left-wingers and right-wingers here, you got clash, because they're not thinking of Krishna's happiness, they're thinking of my position is right, no, my position is right. That means your position is wrong, because my position is right. We don't get unity and diversity because of immaturity, exactly on the same theme. That's a nice question.
So
yes, more. Okay.
So kind of in the same way, connecting back to yesterday, so does it seem like till I can't, or for the longest time, because I am so illusioned, or, you know, my reality is the only reality, so to say, for the longest time, till we can handle it or whatever, does it mean that till that point, I will continue to have, you know, I won't see that concentric, those, you know, the picture of yesterday of that peaceful existence and joyous and blissful collective existence, because till I have my reality as the only reality, I might try to serve Krishna, but I'll serve him with this total commitment, total conviction that my way is the way, or the extension of my way is the goal of Krishna consciousness. Maybe I can put it differently. So if I'm the kind of...
That's a nice way to say it.
Does that make sense?
No, yeah. It's just the extension of the way that I see things is the goal. It should all be like that. It should fit into that paradigm. And something that doesn't fit into that paradigm, well, they're off. I guess I can live with, you know, just some people are off.
Okay.
being contented that I'm right.
And we do that. You don't even realize it.
It's cosmetic. That there is actually dissonance. And we're just, you know, being polite.
Yeah.
And that's what some people say, that religion is. It's just a way of coping when you can't grow up. It's just like, you know, painted and perfume it, and it's okay. But that's not what the message is. You know, so as you go, not just you, as any one of us go on with our paradigm, and that's really got to prevail in the arm wrestling match of, you know, we'll always win because it's right. With that not unity and diversity picture, we're just nice because we don't want to fight, because that doesn't fit within the paradigm, so I just keep going on with my picture, and they're going on with their picture. What's needed is, from my side at least, is the awakening of my Krishna consciousness enough so that I can see, well, you know, there's another personality type where their approach and their gifts from Krishna are different than mine. There's some gopis that are... The way that Jiva Goswami describes this, because Rupa Goswami describes this, is all the gopis are expansions of Radharani, who has all qualities in fullness, and some have a combination of different qualities. Some are very good at music and composition. Some are very good at use of words. Some are very good at floral arrangements. Some are very good at other things. So Radharani engages them and engages them, you know, in an appropriate manner. So it's an abundant symphony. But Radharani is a repository of all those qualities. They are simply expansions of her. And so there's not a clash that somebody's good at this and somebody's good at that. That's their liking, that's their service, that's their way, that's their approach. There's, you know, there's Lolita, there's Vishakha, and you know, they have different personalities. So their way of responding to situations is different, and it's for Krishna's pleasure. So as when Krishna consciousness matures, that's also pleasing to Krishna. Those that really like this, making distinctions and discriminations, and, you know, provided that they're connecting that to the Krishna's pleasure. It's for Krishna's pleasure. Not for my satisfaction and gratification, it's for Krishna's pleasure. That's that spark as it grows, or the seed as it matures, becomes just to state on the theme unity and diversity. I can start to see that. That's also pleasing to Krishna. And especially provided the consciousness of the individual who has that nature is doing that simply for the pleasure of Krishna, not for personal gratification. Of asserting, well, no, I'm right. And that means they're not right, because they're not doing right. But I'll tolerate because... And one day they'll wake up and they'll become right. A judgmental approach rather than it's something that Prabhupada said, and it's being, I like the fact that it's being quoted more, is, I think it's from Bhaktisiddhanta, but that intelligence, A sign of intelligence is that one can hold two opposing views at the same time. One of the things that means is it's not simply within the mind, because the mind is binary. It's a one or a zero. It's either yes or a no, or light or dark. That's the mind. The intelligence is there are opposites that one can hold at the same time. That's a sign of intelligence. This looks like it's in contradiction to that. And this holds its truth, and that holds its truth. On the platform of intelligence, they're both okay. On the platform of the mind is, this is okay, and that's not okay, or this is okay, and that's not okay, but they can't both be okay. On the platform of the mind. So one has to get spiritual intelligence in order to hold opposites and have unity and diversity. Where does that spiritual intelligence come from? Krishna gives it. Krishna gives it to those who tesham satyati yuktanam. And otherwise, you know, we have the aggressive people that want to discriminate, the peaceful people that want to accommodate. But it's neither one is the mature stage. Yes, Parnindu.
Contemplating on last night, one of the things to move from that form of one's own paradigm being the right paradigm, and what just to feed off this last question. One of the statements that Mother Teresa lived by was be kind. And you know, when you're kind to somebody, somebody will, what's that, they put motivations. We think you're motivated or something that, but be kind anyway, or something like that.
Yes.
So the question that comes with is that for a paradigm shift to take place, it requires an external influence, somebody else, an acharya or a guru or somebody else to come in and say, that, look, your paradigm sounds right because it's your paradigm, but there could be another paradigm that you have to look at and so on and so forth. And that person is probably being kind by trying to, you know, maybe bring some lack of thinking on your basis, but it could be seen as motivated, or it could be seen as, you know, trying to push your ideas on me or things like that. How does that...
to get over the obstacle of that erroneous discernment, it doesn't require an acharya to say it? Is that what your question is?
Say that again, what?
I'm trying to say back your question succinctly. Mm-hmm. And is it correct to say that your question is to get over that hurdle of weak discrimination?
Right.
One needs the influence of an acharya to say that's weak discrimination. You need to look more broadly. Is that what your question is?
That is the thing. And if it may be an acharya, it may be somebody else. It's an external influence. And when that is done, could that
be... Oh, the external influence can be Krishna.
Correct.
And the external influence of Krishna can be hearing Srimad Bhagavatam,
mm-hmm,
or chanting Hare Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So Janayati Asha Vairagyam, that was the verse. Gyanam, so the verse that we, one of the two verses we read, just had a different ending. Janayati Asha Vairagyam Gyanam. Instead of saying chad yad haitukam, it says gyanam yad brahmadarshanam. Interesting, Kapila Dev. Same verse. So, from the front, your emphasis is on an external influence, and if you want to analyze that the process of devotional service is an external influence, then the answer is yes. But you could also say the process of devotional service is intrinsic. Bhakti is already there in the soul. And so it just comes out by contact with Shuddha Brahman that comes from scripture or a person or Krishna, or, and it's already there. We're not tuned into the Krishna channel, so we don't get the message from Krishna from within the heart until there's some mercy that descends. So some form of mercy that descends, one form or another form. Krishna's mercy descends. We're not going to do it on our own. An essential added part is, to our sincerity, is Krishna's mercy. But Krishna reciprocates with sincerity and gives his mercy. Different forms.
The follow-up is, could it be that sometimes it depends on how we react to the mercy when we receive it?
Sure, and that is very much a feature of our sincerity. We're not the controllers. From Krishna, you have to give your... I sent you a signal and said, you know, the text message said, you're supposed to give your mercy this way. And it didn't come. And, you know, got this other thing going on, and, you know, Krishna, let me send you the message again. Please get it right this time. But the reality is, when you surrender, this is a phrase that I've grown to appreciate, when you surrender to Krishna, recognize it's on his terms. That's one of the things that Krishna wants. I've realized Krishna wants me to learn and others to learn. When you surrender to Krishna, you don't dictate to Krishna. This is the way that you're supposed to show your mercy. And just make it nice in the end and say, please. But you're not. Krishna shows his mercy how he wants to show his mercy. He's better at it than we are. That's why he's Krishna. So it'll come however he wants it to come. Just accept that, whatever that is.
Same as the Krishna.
So part of the problem is, you know, we still want to be little controllers. Or in the language that you missed during the class was apritak kama, separate interest. Even amongst transcendentalists, even amongst highly elevated transcendentalists by names, Kumaras, and Lord Brahma, Rishi, and so on. If there's this separate interest, so that's the thing that we need to be vigilant about. And to get over that, then we can get this unity and diversity picture, where that and this and somebody got so much diversity is good. And otherwise, we're not going to see that. It's that not having a separate interest, that's what's transcendentally good. Okay.
I'm so glad that devotees are, we are discussing so much positive things for our congregation. So why don't Maharaj please give us some instructions, guidelines, so that the devotees...
I am! Yeah. Privately.
So in a practical manner, like that.
This is not impractical, please.
No.
Consciousness is the basis of all matters.
I mean, in terms of... so that devotees we gather more regularly for kirtan.
I think everybody got the point. I just say back the same thing. When consciousness is there, then it will happen. If consciousness isn't there, it's not going to happen. It's going to be separate. So the essence is to take those, the means of developing Krishna consciousness, not separate from Krishna's interest. We have to let go of our separate interest. And that's not quick, it's gradual. I guess my message to you is, please be patient. Be enthusiastic, but be patient. Don't diminish your enthusiasm. Oh, I've got to be patient. Continue full enthusiasm and be patient. Let Krishna bring things about in Krishna's way of bringing things about. Don't stamp your little foot and say, Krishna, you're supposed to do it faster. This way. Maharaj said, do it this way. Why, Krishna? Not like that. Patient. And in Krishna's own way. And what allows that is firm conviction. You know the teaching. Utsahanishchayat dhairyat. Firm conviction. What's the conviction? The process of devotional service is elevating. It's purifying. Even someone doesn't even know what it is, what's going on. They're in, you know, La La Land somewhere. It's still going to act because it's purifying. I have full faith in that. So my enthusiasm goes to that. So let me engage in that, the process of hearing and chanting, purifying and purifying and purifying and being an example. Not like walking around the club and, you know, letting people have it because they're not doing it the right way. Be an example. Right? Okay. Yes?
You mentioned that there's an element of personalities that are still subjected to this, like, conflict or some things like that. And within our society also we see that as there's senior ways, advanced ways, and amongst the society there's also that sense of, especially with neophytes, that we don't always understand. Like, we may see the faults in a senior devotee, and then we the tendency to disrespect. So how can we, how do we accommodate that in a way that lets us grow, and at the same time doesn't, like, we don't just paint over and say, okay, they're, like, how do we understand when we see those kind of incongruities?
Well, you know, there are different strokes or different focus. I like Trinadapi Sunichena. I like that one. Tarori Vasahishna. Amanida Manadena Kirtaniya Siddha. I like that one. That's one approach. Then another approach is more on the discriminating side. That says, here are persons that are like me, they're trying to purify themselves. This is Prabhupada now speaking to an American woman who wrote to him. And just paraphrase. It's saying it in a different context. These are persons who are, they're taking up the means to purify themselves. And they're not fully purified. They're, using Prabhupada's words, they're in the shower, because they recognize they're not clean. Let me appreciate they're in the shower to make themselves clean, because they recognize they're not clean, and that's the means to make themselves clean. So they're in the shower, making themselves clean. They're not fully clean yet. They know that. But they're trying to their capacity to serve. Let me honor what, you know, then they're trying to make themselves clean, and that sincerity within them. Then another, this is a Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur approach. It's just, in my first week living as a devotee in a temple, this was something that came my way, and it's been with me since, 42 years later. Bhaktisiddhanta wrote in the foreword of one book that I was shown, and I already had some really special appreciation for Bhaktisiddhanta because it was, he wrote the first article that I had read in Back to Godhead magazine. And anyway, without all that detail, I had, with respect, I read the following. A Vaishnava, as one who never finds fault in others, for by doing so, they're indicating that their own heart is honeycombed with the same fault. Then, that was one standalone paragraph, one sentence. The next was, rather, a Vaishnava who is one who always looks within and finds out where is their deficiency here. I mean, that last part is very paraphrased, but, and make their own heart pure. That's the first business of a Vaishnava. So supposing I see something. If I was an Uttama Adhikari, I would see differently. Because I'm not, I'm seeing. And because I'm not an Udma Adhikari, when I see, then I feel. And I'm going finger-pointing. Rather, the advice of Bhaktisiddhanta is, because I'm seeing like that, that tells me something about some contamination within me. Let me make my heart free from that very contamination. Like the same response as over here. Let me set an example. I can't set an example if my heart's not pure. Let me make my heart pure. That's another how to process. I'm using your language, a neophyte. Not I'm little. In my littleness, let me recognize there's work I have to do. Not, you know, they have some work to do. There's work I have to do. And in that mood, let me be of some service to others who, if I'm in the mood of service, maybe I can be of some help. Maybe I can't be, but at least the possibility is there. If I'm in the mood of service, and I'm in this mood of, oh, look at that, look at that. How can I be of service? If my mood is service, then I can express that. In the mood of service, then it's going to be helpful. And if it's not in the mood of service, it's not going to be helpful to me or anybody. Another person or another person. A third person. That can be helpful. So let me make my mood, the mood of service and first service is make my heart clean. Do I see anything in there that shouldn't be there? Yeah. Let me do that. That's something that I can do. At least, you know, it's within my realm of responsibility. There's other things, but that's a good start. Here's one, maybe for the benefit of others in the room besides yourself. And in one day, you'll also be in a position where this may be helpful. Here I am in a situation where I recognize, on the strength of Scripture, here's something that's not right, and I've, you know, examined it in light of Scripture, and it's not right. Not just, you know, it's a discrimination on the basis of Scripture. Now what do? The first is, you know, self-evaluation. Am I in the mood of service or am I in the mood of something else? Immediately. First thing. And then the next thing is, this is something that I do regularly. It's on the theme of purity comes first. If Srila Prabhupada was in this situation, what would happen? Would the situation improve? Would the situation stay the same? Would the situation get worse? That's easy. But it's not happening. So what's the difference? Because I'm not pure. So here's something that isn't right, and it concerns me. Now what am I going to do about it? My first business is I should become pure. If I'm going to do anything, the effectiveness will be based upon purity is the force. So whatever I might say or do, its effectiveness is going to be on the strength of purity. So let me work on that. And to the extent I can be successful in that, there may be some effectiveness in the other. Just like reflex, you know, like boom. You don't have to think about it. That's reflex. So like reflex. Purity is the force.
Yeah, in the process of purification, so is it still just part of that still like expressing, let's say I'm seeing something and I understand, maybe I'm even on the trying my best to be in that position of purity, but I still need to say something. Especially if I'm saying, even I'm not very good, like I teach. So I have kids, and even though I know I'm not the perfect example, sometimes I still need to instruct them and try my best to do it in service.
Yes.
And then I see that that's a growing process because I understand when it's not effective that I've missed the mark. But if I don't try, then I don't...
Well, that there is another option besides I must say something.
Okay.
Another option is between you and Krishna... This is something that I learned from Purichan. In some circumstances, not all circumstances, but in some circumstances, it's best to leave Krishna's business up to Krishna rather than, you know, intervening and being the instrument of Krishna's business because it's not, you don't have the capacity and it's not appropriate. So you say a prayer to Krishna that says, this seems to be a situation between this other person and you. My prayer to you is, you know, please be kind upon this person. Or, it depends on the circumstance, but that's another option. Besides, I must say something. You be patient and allow Krishna to do what Krishna does better than you. You know, it's another option. It's not like, okay, every time of this one, that's all I'm going to do. Prayer is also very powerful. And the prayer goes to Krishna, the Supreme Powerful. Please show your mercy. However you feel, however you see the situation needs, my request. Something. According to your... Supreme Intelligence. Then you're not just being passive or dull. Okay, I think we're going to end. How can I say no? Yes, Brenda.
This has been troubling me for some time, and I needed someone to ask myself. Is that talking of, you know, for example, Vishwanatha Tirthi Thakur had this commentary, Baladev Vidyabhushan has this commentary, and Prabhupada has this commentary. Now, we know from Jiva Goswami that these commentaries don't match with each other. That they have, I mean, if you take them on the verses, they, in fact, they almost have diametrically opposite understanding.
It appears. It may appear.
Exactly. That's what it is. It appears that way. But they're all acharyas. They're all in the same line of thought, which is a bit after that line and so on and so forth. So, just reading up the last question, it says, so, as persons who are looking for role models, as persons who are looking for mentors, as persons who are looking for somebody to follow, and now we are stuck between two acharyas within our own, or two, even maybe, you know, less level, maybe two devotees in the same community, whatever. We are looking for role models to take some instructions or to take some guidance from, and then we are finding that both are pure devotees, but both are seemingly diametrically opposite understanding of things. How does one reconcile those two without...
Depends on the circumstance. I mean, if it's commentary from scripture, that's one circumstance.
Okay.
If it's practical advice and, you know, should I turn left or turn right today? You know, that's the circumstance is different. It's very much circumstance specific. With commentary, just quickly, with commentary on the authority of our commentators, it's perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. That someone has this rendering, someone has that rendering. It's perfectly fine. I may not understand in what way is perfectly fine. You know, how they resonate looks like there's dissonant, not resonating. Mm-hmm. I don't have the capacity, and the previous acharyas explained it's perfectly fine, and that's fine with me. One day I'll understand how they're not dissonant. This connects with that, and it's, although to me it looks like dissonant. And then, you know, down on a day-to-day level, there's etiquette, there's faith, meaning within our the teachings of Narahari Sarkar, the author of Krishna Bhajanamrita, there's an etiquette that's to be observed when receiving instructions from Shiksha Gurus and Diksha Guru, and there's an etiquette to be observed, and I need to follow that etiquette on practical day-to-day things, for example. Or just persons who are guides and friends, that kind of other category. That's a matter of, certainly to a degree, etiquette, but largely it's a matter of faith. Because ultimately, we have to make choices. Are we going to turn left or right? Where are we going to repose our faith? It's not in violation of an etiquette issue, Krishna Bhajanamrita, it's a question of faith. And ultimately, I have to make the decision between left or right. You know, this view that seemed to be opposing to that view. And in those kind of faith decision-making issues on day-to-day matters, ultimately we want Krishna to be pleased. So if we go left, while there's someone advising us go right, we should be open to some indication from Krishna that says, yes, you should have gone right, not left. Even we're starting to go left. Krishna, please, provides an indication if I'm not going the right direction. Ultimately, Krishna is to be pleased when we're exercising our faith in making decisions day to day. And then it gets, you know, so many other varieties of things. Okay. Srila Prabhupada.
Holiness Ramabhadra Swami Ki. Yeah.